most. I'm just going to, like, I don't know how long my voice is going to go for. So, I haven't spoken for half an hour straight yet. So, we'll see what ends up happening. But it goes, the following. Goes the following. Thank you for the great, let's try it now. Here we go. Ve'elish most of the time, we've talking about Yaakov, Yishuv, Eitzavot. These are the names of Bnei Yisrael that came down to Mitzrayim. Yaakov, his house, man in his house, they all came down. So here's the shot. It says the following. We said this in Parshas Lech Lecha from the Maral Diskin. The Maral Diskin said that Avraham Avinu was promised, Ger Yezarecha, your children will be Gerim, Be'eretz Lo Lahem, in a land that will not be theirs. So it's very strange. If you're a Ger, obviously you're going to be in a land that doesn't belong to you. It's obvious. So the words Be'eretz Lo Lahem is they're extra. There's no reason to say them. They should just be Ger Yezarecha. So what does that mean, Be'eretz Lo Lahem? So the pshat is like this. Sorry, we said this out in Parshas Lech Lecha. Sarai Menu got as part of her ksuva from Paro, when she was brought into Paro, and Paro never took this back. She left it by Sarai Menu. She was given the city of Goshen. That city of Goshen was given to her in her ksuva. Yaakov specifically wanted Bnei Yisrael to live in Goshen and sent Yehuda ahead to make a yeshiva in Goshen. Yosef was also involved in this, but Yaakov sent Yehuda ahead to go out and make a yeshiva in Goshen. Why? Said it would be a Geri Yezarecha. It wouldn't be the Eretz Lo Lahem. It would be in an Eretz that was Lahem. Yes, they were going to be Gerim. They were going to be under the Mitzrayim. They weren't going to be in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan. So it's going to be a little bit different. But they could have a better type of Gullus, a Gullus in which nothing would happen to them. And that's exactly what happened in the first couple years. While Yaakov was alive, there were 17 years in which nothing bad happened. Everything was perfect. While Yosef was still alive for the next 25 years after that, everything was all good because they were in a land that belonged to them. They were in Goshen. There was nothing wrong. The problem was that it didn't stay that way. What happened is, it happened by Yomar Alamoli, they Amnei Yisrael Rav Atzumi Manu. There's so many. They became so much stronger. Why? Because Pasuk Zion, Bnei Yisrael, Paru, Vayishritzu, Vayirbu, Vayatsum, Mod Mod. They became so many. There were so many of them. Vatimalei Ha'aretz Osam. The land filled up with them. The Jews went everywhere. Look at us. Look at us. We go everywhere. You go to a random city in the middle of South America, there's Jews there. There's somebody who's related to Jews in some weird type of way. Like, just straight, we're everywhere. We get all over the place. The Jews couldn't take living in the ghetto. They couldn't take living in Goshen. Goshen just wasn't enough for them. They couldn't just stay in yeshiva all day long. Shevet Levi was able to stay there. Shevet Levi wasn't involved in the Shibud of Mitzrayim. But the rest of the people, they wanted to get out. They wanted to see what Mitzrayim was like. They wanted to check out. So they went out everywhere and checked out all of Mitzrayim. And what ended up happening? Vayakam Melachadosh. As soon as they filled up the land and left Goshen, it became Geri Yezarecha, the Eretz Lo Lahem. They went to a land that no longer belonged to them. Then the real Shibud started. That's when the real Shibud started. Shevet Levi was never part of this. Here's the word. They were on the 49th level of Tuba. Everybody remembers that. Everybody hears that. What does that mean? What level are we on? What it means is that they adopted all of the Mitzrayim's customs. They no longer were Jews. They were Egyptian Jews. And they put the word Egyptian before the word Jews. They weren't Jewish Egyptians. They were Egyptian Jews. They started acting exactly how the Mitzrayim would act. Whatever they used to do, they would do the exact same thing. If they hung out in the bars on a certain night, the Jews would hang out in the bars on that certain night. That explains one of the strangest midrashim that you could possibly imagine throughout the entire parsha. Paro, according to the Midrash, got Saras. Anybody remember this Midrash? He had 300 Jewish babies killed every day. 150 in the morning and 150 at night. 300 Jewish children were killed. And he used to bathe in their blood. 150 children in the morning, 150 children at night. It's actually an unbelievable Maral Diskin. I didn't write it down over here. There's a Maral Diskin that says why 300 altogether. He gives like genius. They wanted to bathe in the blood of a child's death. Meaning, when a child dies, it's when the last revius of blood leaves his body. So if you count up, a revius is a revius a lug. It's a revius a lug, a quarter of a lug. A lug is supposed to be a quarter of a kav. Of a kav. It's supposed to be the amount that a person can bathe in is 9 kabin of water. Okay, so do the math really quickly. You have 4 revius in a lug. You have 4 lugs in a kav. That's 16 revios in a kav. How many kavim were there? 9. 16 times 9 for the bath. Anybody want to do a quick math? 144. Very good. 144. You all ready? 144 children have to die to get 144 revios of blood for the morning and for the night. But some kids, you weren't going to get an exact amount of revios. They weren't like squeezing the babies until all the blood came out. So you needed a couple extra. So 150 in the morning and 150 at night would be the exact amount that they needed to have a bath. I didn't write that down, but it's just brilliant math from the Maral Diskin. The Maral Diskin says that down. So here's the pshat. What's shot behind this? And then what happened? What does the Medrash say? Bnei Yisrael groaned by Anhu Bnei Yisrael. This is the Perk Beis, by the way. Perk Beis plus a Yud Gimel. If I remember correctly. Chav Gimel. It says, and they cried out. The cries went straight to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Listen to this verse. It's an unbelievable... The Shemi Shmuel says this. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What happened? How did God stop it from happening? God decided, that's it. I can't take it anymore. So He healed Paro. He's killing 300 Jews a day. I'll tell you what to do. Kill Paro. Let him die. I'll tell you another thing that you can do. Let it not work. Let him still have tzaras, even though he's killing 300 kids a day. Wait, you're healing Paro? Why was that the best thing for Klal Yisrael? The Bnei Yisrael crying out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, please, we can't let this happen. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you're right. I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to let Paro get better.
Did he stop killing babies afterwards?
But yes, but there's 3 ways in which he could have done that. This is the weirdest way that you could have done it. Why was HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing it in a way that was so bad, that was so off? Why do it in this way? Why heal Paro? Here we go. The Medrash says, and this is Parshat Perek Aleph, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, this was the hardest gullus that he could take Bnei Yisrael out of. How do we know that? How did God appear to Moshe Rabbeinu to tell him that I want to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim? Out of Tzneh. What is a Tzneh? It's a thorn bush. What does a thorn bush do? It traps animals and it catches them, and every time they try to get out, it cuts them on the way out. Say not Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it was like for Bnei Yisrael. When I'm taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, I can take them out. There's no problem. But if I take them out, they're going to get scratched. They're going to have problems. It's the hardest gullus, says a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But how is that possible? How is anything hard to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? How is that a problem? Here we go. The Medrash then compares Yitzias Mitzrayim to Kriyas Yamsuf. And it says, Yitzias Mitzrayim was much harder than Kriyas Yamsuf. But I understand. Kriyas Yamsuf was the Yad Hashem. Vayar Yisrael's Yad HaGedola, Shoras Hashem the Mitzrayim. They saw the Yad. But the Mitzrayim, in Mitzrayim, it was Makos, which were an etzpa. Just a finger. And what's greater? A finger or a hand? Clearly the hand. So what does it mean? It was harder for me to have Yitzias Mitzrayim than it was Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yamsuf took more out of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, was a hand as opposed to a finger. Why is that greater than the other? So here's the final one. The final measures of measures in Tehillim Kuf Zayin. Says the Shemi Shmuel. Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim is like a farmer trying to help his mother cow give birth to a baby calf. What does the farmer do? He reaches into the mother's stomach and pulls out the baby calf. Because the baby calf can't do it on his own, so he has to reach inside the stomach and pull out the baby calf. That was Bnei Yisrael, and the mother cow was Mitzrayim. What's pshat? Now, says the Shemi Shmuel, it is unbelievable when you think about it. You know what it was like? Bnei Yisrael were a baby inside the mother's body. What happens to the baby if the mother gets sick? The baby is affected. The baby can't stay separate from the mother. Bnei Yisrael were so entrenched in the tomb of Mitzrayim, they considered themselves Egyptians to the point where if the Mitzrayim got sick, they got sick. If something would happen in the Mitzrayim, they would get affected. HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't just bring Makos and affect the Mitzrayim. If he did so, Bnei Yisrael would have been affected. Bnei Yisrael would have been killed. They would have had the problems. It wouldn't have worked. Bnei Yisrael themselves would have had problems. They didn't have an independent existence. They didn't exist aside from the Mitzrayim. That's why it was so hard. How am I going to punish the Mitzrayim and take out Bnei Yisrael without them being punished? How can I do that? It's like a baby inside its mother's body. I have to reach in and pull out the baby. But if you reach in and you pull out the baby too early, what happens? It's going to die. The baby's never going to survive. The baby's never going to be able to make it. There's no way. It can't make it. What are you going to do? That's why when Paro got sick, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could not let Paro die. If Paro dies, Bnei Yisrael dies with him. The leaders in Klal Yisrael are going to die because they're so connected to one another that one bad thing cannot happen without the other person and ending up being affected by it. That was the problem. That's why Paro had to get better. In order for anything to happen, Paro had to get better. But then what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Bnei Yisrael understand. And this is part of what Moshe Rabbeinu was there for. Moshe Rabbeinu came down to Bnei Yisrael to say to them, separate. Stay away from them. You don't want to be part of the Mitzrayim. And by saying that to Klal Yisrael and making Klal Yisrael think, oh, we can be saved. We don't have to be in Mitzrayim. Let's leave. What happens? Hashem was able to give Makos to the Mitzrayim and the Jews were unaffected. You want to hear crazy Ibn Ezra? Ibn Ezra says, only one Makkah didn't affect the Jews out of the first seven. Only one Makkah. Know which one that was? It was only Kenan. Every other, the first seven. First seven. And then Choshech came along, and what happened during Choshech? 4/5 of them died. The pshat behind that Ibn Ezra is, they couldn't disconnect themselves from Mitzrayim. So what happened? They were affected by the Makos. Dam affected them. They did have water. They had water, but it affected them. Of course, the Jews all had water, but there were certain Jews who still had it bit different, says Ibn Ezra. It was still bad for them. They saw it as blood, even though it tasted like water, if one could say in one way. Tzvargeh was still extremely loud, and they were affected by it. The Jews who were tzaddikim, who separated from the rest of the Mitzrayim, who said, I don't want to be part of this whole civilization, when Moshe Rabbeinu came, they were able to separate, because Baruch Hu was able to make the makos for the Mitzrayim, and get Bnei Yisrael to be getting better. Each makah gave an extra refuah to Klal Yisrael, because they separated from them. They were able to be pulled out of the mother's stomach. But those who weren't able to be pulled out, every single one of them ended up being affected. They couldn't feel the relief. They couldn't feel different from the Mitzrayim. That's why Yetzias Mitzrayim was so much harder than Kriyas Yam Suf. Yetzias Mitzrayim was trying to pull out a nation that didn't want to leave. So what are you supposed to do? So Kadosh Baruch Hu had to show them, you want to leave. Some of them listened, some of them didn't. The ones that listened, everything was all good. The ones that didn't were affected unbelievably badly. To the point where they had the makos happen to them. They had bad things happen to them. And then in Choshech, 4/5 of them died. You know how unbelievable that is? Just in parentheses. That means that Dasan and Aviram didn't deserve to die. Dasan and Aviram, as bad as they were, felt themselves different from the Mitzrayim. That's an unbelievable line because they didn't die during Choshech. They felt themselves as if they were different, as if they were off from the Mitzrayim. That's an unbelievable line. I have a story. Ready for the story? It's a great story. David Kaplan brings it down. It says the following. There's a guy by the name of Moshe. Unemployed Jewish actor. Know this one? He's an unemployed Jewish actor. Unemployed Jewish actor. He's looking for a job. He's looking through the papers, and he sees an ad for a zoo. Very strange ad. It said, come in, we need somebody to act like a monkey. Somebody to act like a monkey. So Moshe said, alright, I can act like a monkey. It's not that big of a deal. So he goes to the zoo, and he finds out the following. There was a beloved monkey that passed away. Maybe a big ape, whatever it is. There's a beloved monkey that ended up passing away. It passed away. So the zoo couldn't replace it. Because it was well known through everywhere. Everybody knew this monkey. It was, I don't know, Bobo the monkey. So Coco. Bobo the monkey was Coco the monkey. Very good. Yeah, I don't know why that's better than Bobo, but we're all good. Coco the monkey. Coco the monkey died? That's sad. Okay, so here we go. The monkey ended up dying. Everybody knew it had special antics. It did certain things. It swung this way and that way. If they would get a new monkey, then everybody would know, and they thought maybe there would be paying customers who wouldn't come anymore. If they wanted to keep the monkey around, but it was dead. So what are you going to do? So what did they do? They wanted to hire an actor. It didn't have to be Jewish. They wanted to hire an actor to play the monkey. So you'd dress up in a monkey suit. He'd act around and he'd do all the antics that this monkey would do. And he'd get around the cage and he'd do this and he'd do that and he'd do everything that another monkey usually does. You know, he just walks around or whatever it is. And nobody would know. Nobody would know. In other words, they put it down and they sewed him up really well and they put him in the car. And everybody really, nobody had any idea. So that's what they ended up doing. So Moshe got really into it. He started like swinging around in the branches and screaming and like pounding his chest and like doing all the different stuff. They looked at everybody, loved Moshe. They said, like, oh, he's back. He's been gone for a couple days, but he's back. And the zoo people were really, really happy. Look at this guy. He's really taking care of it for us. Everybody thought that Moshe was the real monkey. One day, he was swinging and swinging and swinging. He swung himself so hard that he swung himself over the fence and landed in the next cage. The next cage was a lion cage. So the lion is standing right there, baring its huge, sharp teeth. Moshe knows this is the end. So he calls out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yells out, and he says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The lion answers back, Baruch Shem Kivod Hachzol Olam Vaed. So Moshe looks at him, and he's like, Shimi, is that you? So he says, yep, that you, Moshe? He said, yeah. What are you doing in the zoo? They're like, same thing you are. Doing the same thing. How long have you been here for? A zebra on the next cage yells out to them, hey guys, quiet down. You want to get us all fired? What's pshat? It's an unbelievable, it's not a real story. It's not like, that was Lincoln Park Zoo. That could happen. People identify themselves with where they are at any given moment. They find themselves in a certain place and they say to themselves, I'm one of them. I made a commitment and so far I've kept to it. Since I come back to America, and I'm not saying this is something you should do, I'm not saying this is something, whatever, it's just something that I made as a commitment for myself because I know myself. I said, when I get back to America, I'm not going to a sports stadium. Not going to a game, to a real game, like baseball, football, basketball, hockey. Doesn't make it, well, hockey I didn't consider a sport at the time, only now because the Blackhawks are doing well. Now it became a sport. But regardless, like I said, I wasn't going to do it. Why? Because what happens when you're in these games? You become a mindless person. Everybody cheers. You get up and you cheer with them. If there's home run, it doesn't make a difference. You get up with them and you're cheering with them. It's the what do they call it? The electricity of the crowd, where everybody's going out and doing something. You forget who you are or where you are. You forget you're different. We're all together. You slap the hands of the guy sitting next to you, the guy who's a drunken loon who doesn't have a job, who his whole life is all about the Cubs, and that's really sad. And you sit there and you're just like, you're slapping hands with the guy, like, we won. You have nothing to do with that guy. You have nothing to do with him. What is that? That's not you. That's not you. But you forget that. You forget that. What happened in Mitzrayim was exactly this. They thought to themselves, we're Mitzrayim. Whatever they do, we do. If they had a chag, they didn't believe in the Rav Odeh Zarah. They didn't believe that they really had a Rav Odeh Zarah. They knew that there was a God. They had avos. They had Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They knew where their avos were. They had Yosef. They had the Shvatim. They understood what Kadosh Baruch Hu was. They didn't believe in that stuff. But if they would party, they partied with them. Because why not? It's fun. It's what they're doing. That brought them to the 49th level of Tumah. And I know, this is a crazy Musar for us. But that brought them to the 49th level of Tumah. That was the level of not understanding who they were. And that made them the baby in their mother's stomach. The mother could not be killed because they were the baby. They would have been killed also. That's what I meant by Moshe Paro looking up at the stars, seeing the mazel of Klai Yisrael and says, I'm still a mother child. Only at the very end. If you take it out too early, and that's what we said before, he killed a kid. The idea is that when Paro looked up at the sky and said, Barod Tziyav, I see that there's a star in the Shemayim. I see your constellation tells me that you're going to die in the Midbar. You know why the star said that? Because at the time, B'nai Yisrael were still under the power of the Mitzrayim. And the Mitzrayim were going to die. If the Mitzrayim were going to die, said Paro, you're going to die also. Very good. And that's exactly the pshat that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to pull them out from where they were. And four-fifths of them did die. Four-fifths of them did die because they couldn't separate themselves. If Mitzrayim were going to die, they were going to have to die. That's the idea behind it. Now, here we go. I have a vortz. And I connected it. I had this question for years. I saw, surprisingly, 6 answers to the question this year. And then I realized, this vort answers this question. Here's the question. The question is the following. It says, when Moshe Rabbeinu was told, what do you have in your hand? Ma'zeb yodecho. And he said, Vayomer, Mata, I have a staff in my hand.
said the pasuk, "Vayomer Hashulchayu Arzo." He said, "Kadosh Baruch Hu said, throw it to the ground." Vayashulchayu Arzo vayilan achash. He threw it to the ground and it became a snake. Vayonas Moshe mipanav. Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from the snake. He ran away from the snake. Here's the problem. What are you running away from? It's your staff. It's your staff. You know it's your staff. Because Baruch was trying to give you a sign. It's not like it's a real snake.
It is a real snake.
Clearly not. But it's not a snake that's going to hurt you.
Could.
It's your staff. You're going to run away from your own oath? From your own sign, from a Kaddish Baruch Hu? What is that exactly?
That's terrible, because you're saying that Hashem can do anything. He turns my staff into a snake. It's a snake. It can hurt me. You're in a dangerous situation. You run away.
The greatest level that a tzaddik is in the midst of a nevuah when he dies. It's the greatest level of death. It's the neshika of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. You're in the midst of a nevuah with a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and at that moment you die. That moment you die. There is no greater death. He's talking to God. He's in the midst of a conversation with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. He's talking with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and it turns into a nachash. Let it kill you. If a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants you to die, you should die. So what does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Even more so, there's a halacha. If you're in the middle of Shemot Esrei and a nachash goes around your leg, what's the halacha?
You can't move.
Can't move. It says the exact wording is lo mafsik. You're not allowed to be mafsik. You're Shimon Esrei. So if you can't be mafsik, you're Shimon Esrei. Kol Shekin Moshe Rabbeinu talking to a Kaddish Baruch Hu was not allowed to do anything. So how was he able to run away? What happened over here that made him run away? Okay, so here we go. Rav Elyo Mund, in his writings to Rav Chaim Knievsky, said the following pshat. He said, maybe that's pshat in the Ramah. Simon Kuf Gimel Siv Dalid says the following. Kuf Dalid Siv Gimel, I'm sorry. It's Kuf Dalid Siv Gimel, Rav Elyo Mund. He says, the wording of the Shulchan Aruch is Lo Yapsik Bedibor, says the Mishnah Berurah. When a snake is around your leg, you can't stop to talk, to tell somebody, hey, get rid of the snake from off my leg. Avo Yoko Lelech Lemakom Acher Kadesh Yipo Anachosh Mirakel. But you could walk from one place to another in order to what? Or to make the snake fall off your leg. Maybe the makor for that statement, that you're allowed to walk from one place to another, is here from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now Moshe Rabbeinu saw the snake, and even though he was in the midst of his Shemona X-ray, so to speak, he walked around, he ran away from it. So it must mean that it's mutter to move. You just can't speak if you're in the middle of Shemona X-ray and you have a snake on you, but you're allowed to move if you have that snake on you. That's the makor. Said Rav Chaim Knievsky. Rav Chaim Knievsky wrote back to him and said, brilliant. Brilliant. Maybe that is the makor. So Rav Chaim Knievsky, but there's a Sifri. Sifri somewhat says what Aaron just said before. The Sifri in Baal Luzcha says, he got scared. And the Emek Dover, the Nitziv, says, it was Pashit that he got scared. It wasn't a normal thing to happen. Something all of a sudden comes up to you. Says the Emek Dover, says the Nitziv, anybody would be scared by that. Even Moshe Rabbeinu can be scared by something that happens suddenly. He wasn't expecting it to turn into a snake. And it was a big snake and it was poisonous. And he was afraid of it. So he immediately, the first thing he thought to do is they got to run away. That's the immediate reaction that a person would have. That's the second answer. Second answer. Okay, that's not a bad answer. Scared. Okay, I hear that. Number three. There's the Maral Diskin. Maral Diskin says the famous line, what did the Nachash represent to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why did it turn into a snake? Because Moshe Rabbeinu spoke Lashon Hara. So why did he run away? He ran away to do tshuva for the Lashon Hara that he spoke. That's his Vayonos Miponov. He wanted to run away from that sin. He wanted to throw away that sin and say, I don't want to do that sin ever again. He tried to get away from the sin that was there in front of him. That's what he was supposed to do. That's the Pshat Yadin. Then comes the Yaros Devash. Yaros Devash is Rav Yonis and Eibshitz. In Chelik Aleph. Chelik Aleph Drush Gimel, he says the following. Yaros Devash is Rav Yonis and Eibshitz. With 300 years ago, famous Rav. He was famous for his fight with Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden. He got into a big fight with Rav Yaakov Emden. He used to use amulets with God's name inside them in order to heal people. And at the time, that was also because people were thinking that they were doing magic. So Rav Yonis Abshis was told not to do it. He wouldn't stop, whatever it was. Listen to what the Yaros Devash says. I never knew this. The Arizal was given a knas of Misa. The Arizal was told, you're going to die very young. Because he was Megala the Sod of the Nachash to his Talmidim. He told over the Pshat behind this Pasuk. What does it mean that the Mata turned into a Nachash? He told over the secret behind this Pasuk. And in Shemayim they had a Bas Kol that came out and said, the Arizal will not live a full life. He's going to live a young life. He's going to die at the age of 38. And that's exactly what happened. he was fined with death from Shemayim to try to understand this shot, trying to understand this pasuk. Here's the Arizal. The Arizal says, "I'll give you a different shot." We know this from last week. Sanhedrin Sadi Zainim Abayis. If Bnei Yisrael do tshuva, good, Mashiach will come. If Bnei Yisrael don't do tshuva, what will God do? He'll give them an evil king like Haman. The evil king like Haman will make them have so much sorrows that they end up doing tshuva on their own, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save them. Says the Gemara. Bava Basra Tezayinim Abayis. An Ayala, which is a female deer, has a very narrow womb. Very, very narrow womb. It can't give birth. There's no way for it to give birth. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings a snake. The snake bites the womb. It's like anesthesia. And then all of a sudden it opens up and the baby is born. It's a female deer. Unbelievable Gemara. It's a remez.
Is that true?
The Ayala, not by what we see nowadays, but I don't watch all female deer give birth, so it could happen.
I thought you would know that.
Yeah, it's not what we know of nowadays, but it's the point is a remez. Am Yisrael can be molded great things, unbelievable things, but sometimes it just doesn't. They close themselves up because they're not in the mood. They didn't do tshuva. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He brings a snake. The snake represents an evil king. A king like Haman, a king like Paro. To bite the Ayala. To cause it pain. To give pain to Klal Yisrael. So what does Klal Yisrael do? They daven. And then once they daven, they're able to... they're able to give birth. Moshe saw how bad Bnei Yisrael was. He said he saw the Mate turn into a Nakash. He said, oy vey. That means Klal Yisrael won't deserve to do tshuva on their own. They're only going to do tshuva if there's a Nakash that comes along and bites them and causes them all this tzaras. He saw there was going to be unbelievable tzaras for Klal Yisrael like they'd never seen before. The Avodah was going to get much, much harder. He said, oy vey, he ran away. He said, I don't want this. Maybe Klal Yisrael's not going to be able to take it. Maybe they won't be able to handle this. So he ran away and he said, no, send out your hand, grab its tail. Why the tail? People hit rock bottom, the only way for them to go is up. Klal Yisrael is almost at rock bottom. Grab it by the tail. Once you see that the tail is there, their mamash at the very, very end, Klal Yisrael can only do tshuva. Don't worry, they can't get any worse. And I'm not going to let them get any worse. Said Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'll make sure that they're on the rock bottom right now. There's nothing that can happen. They'll come right back up. That's the pshat behind the remez. That's the pshat behind the entire medrash. And that's the pshat behind Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim. That Klal Yisrael was being told in Mitzrayim that all you have to do is have this nakash and everything will be good. As soon as I read that Yaros Devash, I said to myself, wait a second. The nakash is Paro. You know what pshat is? Why Moshe Rabbeinu ran away? Because what was the problem with Klal Yisrael? Their problem was that they attached themselves to the Mitzrayim. They made themselves like they were Egyptian Jews. They couldn't stop calling themselves Egyptians. Whatever they did, Bnei Yisrael did. They couldn't stop themselves. They always said, we are these Egyptians. We're the same. We're all the same. How are you attacking that? How do you fix that up? You not fix that up? You run away from them. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do when he saw the Nachash that represented Paro? He ran away. He said, I don't want to have anything to do with the Mitzrayim. I don't want to have any shaitness with the Mitzrayim. That was the tikkun for Klal Yisrael. It was the davka that Moshe Rabbeinu had to run away. That's the only thing that a Jew should do if you realize you're getting pulled in by the society around you. When you're being influenced by everything around. What? First of all, later on, he is called the Nachash HaGadol. That's why he threw it down in front of Paro, and Paro said the Tanin HaGadol. So he is called the Tanin later on. But according to Yaros Devash, it makes even more sense that the Nachash represented an evil king that was going to make them do tzar, that was going to have bad things for him. Even more so, that Nachash, I'm sorry? What do you mean? In Mitzrayim. No, it's not. You're right. Most of the running away is in your mind, thinking, I'm different, I'm a Jew. It's not running away from the entire world and saying, forget it. You know, tear off your clothes and just wear like a robe. You know, and just say like, I'm different from everybody else and wear a sign that says like, I'm a Jew. I hate all of you. That's not the point. The point is, yes, you're in a society where this is how we live. This is what we wear. This is what we do. You sit there and you say, but I'm a Jew. I'm not an American Jew, or even a Jewish American. I'm a Jew who right now is in Golos. The Golos happens to be in America. But I'm not an American. Do you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fact that we have a Medina like this on July 4th? Yes. Yes. 1,000%. But not as I'm an American. Say it as I'm a Jew who's thanking God for the fact that we have a Medina that's this good. That we have a Medina that allows us to do whatever we want. Can I help you out with this?
What's
I got another story.
For keeping their names, their dress, and their circumcision?
So, and yet they still consider themselves part of the Mitzrayim. That was a Pella. And look at us. I'm speaking English, wearing non-Jewish clothing with an English name. Well,
not
I don't really have
clothing.
An English name.
What are Jewish clothing?
Then?
What are Jewish clothing?
Jewish clothing?
You say you're not wearing Jewish clothing.
I'm not wearing Jewish clothing. I'm wearing the regular clothing that everybody else wears.
That's Jewish clothing.
Nowadays we don't have it.
Jewish clothing don't buy a bar fart. No, what's
the clothing? We don't have it right now. It is something that only Jews wore. 300 years ago, that wasn't a Shiloh.
What?
Guys, I'm not making a mistake. No. That's up for now. I've got a story. I've got a story. The final story is Edna was married to Old Fred. Old Fred. Old Fred is also a mushroom. Old Fred said to his wife, "Listen, Edna, I'm going to die soon. If I ever become dependent on a machine, I want you to just pull the plug. I never want to live my life dependent on a machine." Edna nodded her head. She got up and pulled the plug out from the TV. Good little one, right?
Yeah.
Nice little joke. Nice little joke. The Ishbitzer is famous for the fact that the Avoda and Mitzrayim was not necessarily an avoda of hard labor, where they were working as slaves. Not necessarily, says the Ishbitzer, a chiddush. Their avoda was that they were so subservient to the society in Mitzrayim, they couldn't pull themselves out. Yaakov was a mummy, right? Yaakov was mummified. Yaakov became a mummy. Oh, even he took on all the minhagim of Mitzrayim. So if Yaakov could do that, Lachik's Parsha, if he could do that, then for sure we can do something as well. Once they do that, they say that's why Nistumuinam Valiban Shaiso, as soon as Yaakov died, their eyes and their hearts closed because they started saying to themselves, well, look, if other people have that happen to them, I can also get in. So eventually they filled up Mitzrayim. Eventually they went everywhere. Eventually they became part of Mitzrayim, became part of the Egyptian workplace. To the point where, who do you think was on top? The Jews. And Paro got up and he said, no more. I don't want this anymore. They used to have a Mishnah in a memory of Yosef HaTzadik. It had to be from Yosef's family. It had to be a Jew. And Paro said, I don't want the Mishnah anymore. I'll take care of it myself. And Paro kicked out the Mishnah, kicked out the Jews from the top levels of government, and said to them, tricked them into starting making avoda, and eventually brought them into Golos. But that's not what's happening by us, right? It's not going to happen by us. We live in a different world now, right? We're not subservient to society. We don't do things that they do. It's a Pella. It's a Pella. That's where we are right now. Have a Shabbos.